This is the Angry GM, and this is the Angry GM's mostly monthly live chat, first of the year, or the first monthly live chat of the year, not first live chat of the year, because we all know we had to have an emergency live chat like a week ago due to, you know, role-playing gaming emergencies. Let me tell you, one of the things I missed most about accounting was sudden frantic emergencies. So I'm really glad that every couple of years, something happens to affect the entire creator and content creation and, you know, role-playing game community. If it's not Patreon changing their fee structure, or, you know, someone threatening to take me down, then of course it's Wizards of the Coast changing the rules for everyone and trying to seize control of the entire role-playing game community. But I already did an entire live chat about that this month, so I am not going to do any more about it tonight. If you want to go back and listen to it, there is a live chat. It is a flash chat that came immediately before this one in the podcast feed. And you can go back and listen to what I had to say about all of that, even though news has come out since that I refuse to respond to because I came up with a plan and now I'm just going to start executing that plan. 2 weeks behind, but, you know, better than nothing. And I guess we'll talk about that. First and foremost, welcome to everybody who is listening live. And geez, we have a lot of people listening live. As with all of these live chats, Nitsua, Angry on Nitsua, was kind enough to create a bingo game for everybody to play. So it's already been linked in the chat and it is in the pinned messages. So click on the little link, roll a D30, pick a bingo card, print it out or have it open on your screen and mark off the things as they happen. If you win, yell bingo and let Nitsua know. And apparently, he will send you a prize, a book of your choice from Appendix N. I have absolutely nothing to do with this. So, you know, this is all on him, which we were discussing a little bit in the pre-show. Let's see. Okay, so there's that. That's covered. Otherwise, there is also a Q&A thread for when I run out of stuff to say. I will start saying the things that you say and then responding to them. So if you have any questions or comments you would like me to respond to, go ahead and post them in the mostly monthly live chat Q&A thread. And otherwise, normally I would do some news and some jabbering and yammering about my gaming life, and I guess I've got to do that. Though, a couple of shout-outs, first of all. Let's do some shout-outs, because I never do shout-outs. And I realized that this is kind of a crime against the members of my community, because some of the folks in my community do some amazing things. For example, O-Dog, the designated Angry Discord official funny guy and meme lord O-Dog, gets a happy birthday. He has managed to not die again. Good on him. And I only know that because he shares a birthday with me. So all of you have forgotten to wish me a happy birthday, but then again, you have roughly 5 hours before the birthday actually comes around. You know, so I assume the presents will be in the mail. O-Dog's birthday counts as time management? I do not think that it does. No. Are you trying to cheat on your own bingo? Anyway, the other thing I want to shout out, at least this time, and then I'm going to make amends on this. I actually put out an announcement today. If you are a Discordian, someone who has been supporting me at the Discord level or is a member of the Discord, and there is a thing you create, particularly if it is a gaming-related thing that other members of the community would be very interested in, whether you have a YouTube channel or whether you have like a, you do art or you do music or you create content of your own and publish it and sell it somewhere, I would like to know about that. I used to collect this information a long, long time ago, and kind of fell lax on it. And the reason this all came up is because if you're listening to this recording, you are listening to this recording thanks mainly to the efforts of Rattercrash, an Angry On who also happens to I mean, he does the sound mixing, so he makes this sound not terrible because I suck at recording. And the other thing he does is he puts that little jingle at the beginning of my podcasts, that little, you know, the Angry Games or whatever it is. or whatever he is. So you can tell how much I appreciate his work. But actually, I really do appreciate his work. There was a miscommunication, and I always assumed that was a piece of stock music that he had found and just licensed. But it turns out he composed that. And it also turns out he is actually a composer and has a YouTube channel where he posts his original compositions and a Spotify spot, which I have been told is absolutely not the correct name for a Spotify whatever it is, but nonetheless, that's what I'm going with. He has a Spotify spot. And the reason this came to my attention is because he did a composition that was inspired by his, I think it was when I ran him through the Fall of Silver Pine Watch module, or he then took it and ran it himself. But either way, he did a composition called The Cursed Valley, inspired by that module. And then he shared it with me. I'm like, wait, you're a composer? So, you know, absolutely, definitely check that out. I actually have been listening to his music on his YouTube channel this week because I like to have good background music to listen to, while I'm working, and I can't listen to anything with words because then I just type the words that I type, which leads to confusion when I'm like writing an article. And it's like, look, the important thing as a GM is to remember that you have to communicate clearly. And if you want to be my lover, you got to get with my friends. Love might last forever, but friendship never ends. The point is, always be clear and concise. Don't try to be poetic in your GMing. So, yeah, that was an awkward article I put out. So I've been listening to his stuff. It's really awesome. And I want to hear from more people who create things. I know there are a few. I know I have quite a few artists in the Discord. And I've already gotten a few emails from other people. So let me know. The thing is, if I share it around, it is an endorsement from Angry Games Incorporated. So it has to be something that I am comfortable endorsing. And that means, number one, absolutely no sexual content of any kind. I am sorry. I'm not comfortable endorsing that. I have strict PG-13, so no adult stuff. And the other thing is absolutely nothing that has any sort of a political stance one way or the other, and I will be the judge of whether it is a political stance. It's not a matter of whether I agree with it or whether I disagree with it, but Angry Games does not have political opinions. Angry Games only has opinions about game making and game publishing. And unfortunately, sometimes that does mean that there are certain politics that do come up specifically in terms of things like, you know, content control and stuff like that. But beyond that, Angry Games has no official political position or affiliations. And I intend to maintain that. I am a game company. So there's that. Those are the plugs I wanted to get in tonight, absolutely. And then I'll figure out a way to keep doing that. Beyond that, unfortunately, the news has been dominated by the OGL crap, and I don't want to talk about it anymore. So, you know, and that's the biggest tragedy in all of this. It is not Wizards of the Coast and what they're doing or anything else. The biggest tragedy is that, like so many things that have happened in the past couple of years, this is now the only conversation anybody can have. It's a shame because I had recently reinvigorated my Twitter account and I was starting to interact and joke around, and I actually made some friends on Twitter and rediscovered some people on Twitter, and we were joking around and having a good time and, you know, just trading banter like the old days and this shit. So there you go. Now this is all we can talk about. So I refuse to talk about this. What I am going to talk about, though, is I dropped an article today, and because it was late, because I have spent the last week and a half dealing with OGL nonsense, and when I say deal, I'm okay, here we go. I'm going to talk about it a little bit. When I say dealing with OGL nonsense, I don't mean that I am sitting around pissing and moaning about the whole OGL situation on Twitter and Discord and sending nasty emails to Wizards of the Coast and making phone calls and things like that. I did do more of that than I probably should have and that I'm comfortable to admit because it has been an emotional and stressful time. But as I mentioned in the last live chat, their move has made it very, very scary to publish D&D content, and they're deciding not to come out with an official statement and put it off for 2 weeks does not make that any better. And it did invalidate something like 35% of my upcoming plans for the year. Because I sat down and actually planned out my content plans for the year. At least in broad outline. You know, I didn't like do every week's article. I can't tell you what the title of article number 3 in October is going to be, or as I code it, F1003. But I did have a really, really good solid plan, and about 35% of that plan I do not feel safe doing in the current environment. Especially given the way Wizards has been interacting with the folks who run crowdfunding platforms, because that gets them very, very close to where most of my income is. And I also had to pull down some content to make sure that I wouldn't, when they dropped the news, I wouldn't suddenly already be in violation of anything. So anyway, so there was a bit of back and forth with Patreon to make sure that my position was clear and that my and that they had contact information and knew that I fully intended to comply with anything and that I never ever published anything OGL and didn't intend to, and scrubbing some content, moving some things around, and then rejiggering and coming up with a new plan. And that is why I am now a week and a half behind. And I'm losing a week and a half out of the end of the month, or a week out of the end of the month, because I am I'm going away to New York next week to visit my family, who I haven't seen in like 3 years now. So that'll be fun, but it does mean that I now have like a week to catch up on content. And the first article of that week of 1 month of content, which is going to be a delight, came out today. And I made the choice of putting it out both for general release and for early access so everybody saw it. Okay. That article, I feel, is a very important article, and it's worth talking a little bit about here. Because, first of all, it is the start of one of my major plans for the year, which is to provide a 25-ish part lesson in advanced game mastering. Okay, walking, and you know, I have a syllabus, I have an outline. I broke down game mastering into 4 components, of which I intend to tackle 3 in this series, in order. So it'll be, you know, running the game, it'll be campaign management, which is, and when I say campaign management, by the way, I mean all the stuff it takes to string a series of adventures into an ongoing game. And a lot of that is, you know, apart from like session zero and setting expectations and all of that crap, and also building plot arcs and stringing things together, if that's the kind of thing you want to do, there's also going to be things like talking to your players and conflict resolution. So, you know, all of that stuff is going to be handled in there. Hey, Jazzy, if you have a question, it would be really great to put it in the Mostly Monthly live chat Q&A session thread so that I will see it when I'm ready to start answering questions. So, and then I will be happy to address that question, I promise. So I have that whole plan, and this article was sort of the introduction because it served as not just the statement of the goal, which is what do I think a great GM actually is and what am I going to try and teach you how to do, but, and already people have noticed this, so I, you know, in the comments, but I am also changing my writing style very deliberately. Okay. And already I have gotten some feedback from a few folks. There was at least one comment. There were a couple of messages and emails having taken note of the fact that this article is written differently than the articles before it. So I would really value, and I'm not going to go into any detail this time around, and the writing style is going to be an evolution. I can't just flick a switch and change everything all at once. That said, if you like the next couple of articles, if you notice anything about them that, oh, these are more readable, or these are less readable, or I find them more boring, or whatever, let me know. Post a comment on the article. And that, by the way, is the best place. If you want to comment on an article or ask a question about an article, the best place to do that is on the article itself at theangrygm.com. So, you know, throw it in there. But I would like to know what you think of it. And I feel like I've already tainted the survey just by calling attention to the fact that it might be... that it might be a little bit, there might be something different to look for. And I'm sorry, I still get distracted every time the screen scrolls, and I should learn to minimize Discord until I'm ready to actually take questions and comments. But I'm very, as soon as there's something in my peripheral vision because of the screen scrolled, I'm like, whoa, what's that? Okay, so that's it. Just take a look at that. This one was a little bit longer than I want them to be. I would like going forward for my articles to top out at about 3,000 words. Okay. Normally I would write about 5,000 words, but the last several articles have been ballooning to need 6,000 words or more, which takes a long time to write, though not as long as you might think, because I've gotten very fast at it. Which is also why I'm willing to say that, yeah, I can crank out another 10,000 words in a week if I have to. Though, I mean, stuff's already outlined and kind of figured out. But anyway, so I'm just, I would love opinions on that. The rest of the content plans right now are a little up in the air. I have to re-examine what I can and can't do. So I'm just going to move forward with this stuff for the month. In February, then I'll jump in with the other stuff like rules hacks and things like that. Let's see, what else is going on? Oh, okay. First of all, this is going to be of no news to anyone, but I am working on an RPG, the Angry RPG, and that is going to be a long time in development. I have decided not to respond to all of this folderol by trying to rush the development of, of that game under Project Honeycrisp. I have decided not to rush that, try to rush it to market and try to catch all of the people. I have a different plan for all of that. Yeah, and folderol. Stu is calling out folderol. I have been using the word folderol a lot. I like it. I like it because it's... I like it better than brouhaha, but brouhaha is also fun to say. But brouhaha implies more of a fight than folderol. Folderol is just general chaos. Actually, I think folderol is actually technically nonsense, but I use it more as chaos. Folderol describes my life in any given moment. Anywho, so I am not rushing Project Honeycrisp. It is going to take how long it takes. That said, I am working on another different system right now, one that I am rushing. Okay. It is currently, the title of the engine is Slapdash, because it is literally something I am slapping together, except it's not really that slapped together. My group of Tuesday night victims have had to put their 3.5 D&D game on hold so that they can beat this to death for a month to make sure that the engine is sound and then I can start building content for it. My intention is for those of you supporting me at a high enough tier, that you are due bonus content is to, when it is, when at least the basics are done, to give it away and then continue supporting it with additional content throughout the rest of the year. And for the rest of you, I intend to sell it in the Angry Games store. So, and for the cheap, I'm not, this is not going to be a Kickstarter thing. I'm not going to publish a giant ass book or anything like that. This is going to be download the PDF, you know, or maybe I don't even think I could do print on demand though. Maybe I do have, I did finally find a local offset printer. And I might be able to get crappy, like magazine style prints of it on the cheap that I could then sell. But ultimately the plan right now is to just make a system and start supporting it so that I have a way to put out bonus content. Because I can't do it for D&D and I cannot learn Pathfinder inside and out quickly enough to start making bonus content for Pathfinder. Plus, at this point, I'd much rather keep working on my own projects anyway. But I promise this is interesting. And one of the things that I really want to try and do... See, okay, originally Slapdash was going... maybe I'll tell... I don't know if I should talk about the history of Slapdash or anything else. I don't know. Yeah, I got some time. It's either that or I'm going to like talk up Castles and Crusades some more. Which is what my Friday night victims are going to have to suffer through because I've decided that's the game I now love for this week. Actually, it was the GM, the Castle Keeper's Guide that's all, okay, one thing at a time. Slapdash. Years and years ago, I wanted to run a couple of one-shots online just for random friends and supporters and things. And I wanted to do unusual stuff. Okay, yes, let's straighten out Slapdash, Thin and Crispy, Honey Crisp, and Gala, that'd be great. And again, that's really the sort of thing that you could just do in the Q&A thread, and then I can fix it. And I will, I'll address that in a minute. Okay, but I am going to explain the origin of Slapdash. Years ago, I wanted to run some one-shots online, but I wanted to do something other than fantasy. Even though fantasy adventure is my absolute favorite genre, it's the place I am most comfortable with, it's the thing I love, but nonetheless, once in a while, you need a friggin' break. And I wanted to do, because I had just finished a playthrough of Metroid Prime 3 Corruption. And one of the neat things of Metroid Prime 3 Corruption is the only time in Metroid history that you saw Samus working with the other space hunters contracted by the galaxy or the Galactic Federation, which was alluded to in the instruction manual for the first Metroid game ever. Back when Samus was just this weird, mysterious bounty hunter and nobody knew anything about his, her, or its origins. And she would just, you know, the Galactic Federation would just cut her a check and then she'd do the thing. But anyway, so I wanted to run a game based on that. And I didn't have a system for it because I couldn't find a system I wanted, and it's just a one shot. I didn't want to learn a whole new system. So I said, I have a really neat way that I could file the serial numbers off D20 and create interesting custom characters that were reasonably well balanced very, very quickly by just using certain tricks and an understanding of the system, none of which I will be explaining right now, I'm sorry. Though ask me another time and I will. The result was basically a 5-page, it's almost like a conversion guide. It's almost like a instructions for a GM to strip out bits of D&D 3.5 at the time, and turn them into whatever game the GM happened to want at that time, and even give the characters some abilities to focus on archetypes. Like you can have, you know, the machine empath and the ice manipulator and the power armor character. And you could do that sort of thing very easily just by stripping things away. And it was just a set of like 5 pages of guidelines, which I have long since lost. I've thought about doing that again for a while. that I could do something very similar. But the problem is it references the system reference document. Okay, the stuff you're allowed to steal from D&D, right? And the idea was, here's how you go through the system reference document and pick and choose things. Like, one of the ideas was you could give a character, a first level character, essentially a first level spell, something on par with a first level spell, a first level cleric or a wizard spell, that they can cast ad infinitum if you had them follow certain casting rules. And it was something along the lines of, so you might be able to give your party a bless, right, by rolling a leadership check. But if you failed the leadership check, you would instead, sow confusion and cause a minor penalty for one round. Whereas if the bless succeeds, it's like plus one to everything for 10 minutes. But if the bless fails, it's like a minus one penalty for one round of confusion, right? And so that was the idea, was also to take all the daily abilities and Vancine spellcasting, and then turn them into a way where you didn't need arbitrary limits, and instead it was a, well, this ability is so minor, it doesn't break the game if you can do it every time, or this ability is a little bit more major, but while it's active, you take a penalty, which is kind of what rage is anyway, right? I mean, rage is like, if it's a plus two to attacks and a minus four to armor class or something, then it balances itself out. You really shouldn't care then if the person is enraged all the time. But, you know, what do I know? So anyway, I come up with this system for stripping down D20. And now that I'm talking this up, everybody's going to be like, well, can you write that up now? And I'm like, I don't know. Will I get sued for it? Who the hell knows? Because, by the way, this is the other thing. If I give away anything as exclusive bonus content that infringes on Wizards of the Coast license, they declare my entire Patreon to be making money off of them. And then I have to start reporting to them because then I become a commercial licensee. And since they now have eyes in Patreon, I have to worry about that. That's why I can't give away exclusive bonus content that is D&D related anymore. Because then I have to start reporting to them. And then they can also police my content, which is another thing. Assuming the OGL happens the way it is. Now they're saying it's not gonna, but we don't know. But anyway, I'm going to assume right now that their content is just too dangerous to touch, that they are a rabid Wolverine and I am not going to pet them. So anyway, I thought for a long time about reviving this slapdash idea of, you know, could I file the serial numbers off D20 and put together enough of that stuff that a GM could, from these little components, build characters for little one-shot games? Like if you wanted to run, a pulp 1920s adventure, The Hunt for King Solomon's Mines, could you have like the adventuring archaeologist and give him trap detection and trap sensing type abilities that you stripped off the rogue? Or, if you have like the scholar or like the shaman that leads them through the jungle, you know, does he have druidic abilities, stuff like that? And you could, you know, and then you could just kind of like put all that stuff together. And that's what I was going to do, but then I actually came up with a really, what I think is a neat idea for a game engine, and I don't really want to talk about it until I've actually put it in front of people, because I had said something in one of my articles about, wouldn't it have been neat if advantage and disadvantage in D&D was something only the GM could do? That all the rules can only give you numerical bonuses, but if you want advantage or disadvantage, then you have to earn it from the GM. And if the GM knows when and why to give out that advantage, let's call it, and knows that advantage should only be given out in situations where the player is exploiting their knowledge of the game world or exploiting teamwork such that they had to be paying attention to the world around them or had to be paying attention to what the other characters were doing and incorporate that shit into their own action, then you kill a lot of push-button play by demanding that the players are instead playing the situations instead of their stats. And if they play the situations instead of the stats, they'll get better bonuses than if they just play on off the character sheet and just say, well, you know, I'll use Intimidate and I'll activate my Intimidating Rage power for being an orc. And, you know, so, you know. Anyway, so this is my idea. This is what I am experimenting with now. And in the end, it probably will not just simply be a system that the GM can rip apart and then reassemble into any sort of game. I'm actually picturing that in 3 months, and this is crazy, but I'm actually picturing in 3 months, by sometime in April, I can have a crappy PDF system that is somewhere in terms of weight and volume between, let's say, Savage Worlds and something powered by the apocalypse. Okay, something in terms of length and the amount of stuff in that book, somewhere between Dungeon World and Savage Worlds, just as basically a PDF that you can then download and start playing. And then after that, I can add in more content. So the number of like monsters and rules and things might be fairly, or abilities and character types might be fairly limited when it first hits. But then after that, every month, I can roll out another little content patch to it. So that's currently my plan for bonus content for the year. And then, like I said, it's a freebie for those entitled to bonus content. And to the rest of you, you can pay me like, I don't know, like $20 for the initial rules. And then, you know, like $1 or $2 for maybe like $1 or $5, depending on how big the content patches come out to be. Robo Puffin, you probably want to throw your question in the Q&A thread because I can't see anything that's happening in the non-Q&A thread. Anyway, speaking of the Q&A thread, I think I've yammered along long enough and I really don't need to talk about Castles and Crusades. Next month is another month that I could talk about that after I've actually started playing it and running it, though I did check it out. And also, I've been very impressed with the way Troll Lord Games, who publishes Castles and Crusades, has handled themselves and everything online. They are a company that I really, really like the idea of giving my money to. So I bought up the core rule books to check it out. And since I do have a new game starting on Friday nights, that pretty much helped solve one of my problems, which is what do I want to run? Because even without the whole OGL bullshit, I had also kind of lost my love for Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition. So, and that's been no secret, and I don't need to talk about that anymore. So with that said, I'm going to move to questions and comments for the remainder of the time. And if I run out of questions and comments, then I will stop talking and go to bed. Otherwise, Mr. Producer, let me know how much time I have left. And RoboPuff, and throw that in the live chat Q&A so that I can start addressing some of these things. Okay. No. 27 minutes. Okay. Are you able to tell us what content for deleted off the Angry website, boss monsters, old hacks, entire articles, etc.? Okay. I realize there was a little bit of a miscommunication here. As of now, nothing has been deleted off my website. Okay, everything that was there in December is still there in right now. Okay, the important thing was that I had to get content off Patreon so that Patreon is not hosting anything that would be considered infringing. Okay, that means, see, if Patreon's doing it, then Wizards can talk to Patreon and say, take down the Patreon. If I'm hosting it and the only thing Patreon has is links, then Patreon has to talk to me and Wizards of the Coast has to talk to me. Patreon has nothing to do with it. At least that's part of the whole thing. Nothing is going to be deleted off my website until such time as I get a nasty letter from Wizards of the Coast saying things have to be deleted off my website. Okay, so it's all still there insofar as it ever was. Okay, I realize that that might have not been clear. In the old days, I actually posted my articles for early access directly on Patreon and then would only post them on my website a week later. So there was a copy of many of my articles hosted on Patreon. And they're actually still mostly there because Patreon has kind of, in my communication with them, they kind of said, look, if something comes up, we'll communicate with you and we'll help you bring yourself in line with what needs to happen. So basically they said, hold off on killing all your old content just yet. I'm still gonna, but I'm not rushing to delete like 6 years worth of content in one go, because there's no way to bulk delete it, it turns out. But anyway, for right now, it's all still there. Okay. Stu asks, what made the sidebars painful? Yeah. Okay. This is a shame because I have gotten a lot of... The article went live today and I already have about a half dozen, actually now about a dozen comments in places about it. And one of the things people thought were neat was the sidebars. I commented during the proofread aloud that the sidebars were a pain in the ass and I would never do them again. And it is really just a matter of how the formatting interacts with the... I use WordPress as my backend with heavily modified theming, which because I've done a lot of tinkering with it. But still, in the end, my articles are... you know, typed into a WordPress editor and then formatted there. So even finding a method that I didn't have to code myself to make the sidebars was somewhat time consuming. And there's actually just one particular little bugbear with them. And that is the sidebars cannot go past a heading, which I didn't realize. So I had to kind of finagle things and fit them, and it took a little extra time, but the response to them has been so positive, and I really do think they suit my writing style well that I'm probably just gonna suck it up and do them. So I'm probably not gonna stop doing the sidebars. I like them, and I did already install the necessary modifications to do them, so they're gonna stick around. Okay. Kaladrev, I like the new sidebars you included in today's article. Thank you for making my point. Jazzy, is the new Game Master series meant for new GMs or for more experienced GMs? All right, the new Game Master series will not teach you the very basics. If you have never, ever, ever run a game before, it won't tell you how to run a game. But if you have run at least one game, it will benefit you, okay? Think of it like, I kind of described it like this. My book, Game Angry, How to RPG the Angry Way, was mainly about taking somebody who knew nothing about the role-playing game hobby and getting them behind the screen for the first time. And then telling them, and here's some things you should think about for your second and third time, okay? This series of articles is the follow-up. It's, okay, so you got behind the screen one or two or three or half a dozen times. Now let me tell you how you can be a great GM instead of just someone who can GM. Okay. So that if you are a new GM, there's going to be plenty of stuff for you. And once I get through the first two parts, which are high-minded bullshit, and conceptual and visionary and aspirational, after that, it's going to be more nitty-gritty topics. The first 4 months of it are going to cover things like narration, action management, encounter management, action resolution, how to address your players at the table and, you know, speak clearly to them, and all that sort of crap. All the, you know, like running your game at a slightly higher level. So, yeah, keep reading. It'll be rewarding. At least I hope it'll be rewarding. Cycloptic Squirrel, you had love for 5e at some point. Oh, that's a question. You had love for 5e at some point? Yes. Yes, very early on I did enjoy it. I really did enjoy picking it. I actually enjoyed working with it more than I enjoyed running it. I'll say that. The problems that I had with it didn't become clear until much later on. And a lot of them were problems of the game resisted everything I tried to do with it. Okay. I was like, I'm trying to write a crafting system and I'm just trying to build it so that it fits into the power framework that's already established in the game. And then discovering that the hooks are just not there for it. And then I would have to redo those and redo those and redo those. And the amount of stuff I had to do crafting the way I wanted it to do suddenly became a nightmare. I was trying to write about, you know, how to manage towns. And I realized that there was nothing in D&D that actually makes towns necessary. That was what killed Talmo more than anything. This is the big thing in D&D, okay? Town mode, this whole concept of using town mode as the way to build the gaming, the cycles, right? What the hell is it called? What's the phrase that I use all the time that I know? Gameplay loop. Right, gameplay loop. Using town mode as the circle, or as the top of the circle for the gameplay loop is pointless in D&D 5e because the players have no reason to ever return to town. Okay, they can sleep fully and recover in the wilderness and get everything back. They level up instantaneously. They can survive endlessly in the wilderness with fairly trivial checks. And so the whole point is there's nothing that drives the players ever back to town except the GM saying, guys, you should go back to town now, or you have to go back to town and turn in your quest, you know? And that's just not strong enough to build any reason to stick around in town. So anything I wanted to anchor to town, be it interacting with the populace or maintaining your gear or whatever, had to be another system I would have to write. And that's what I realized I was doing at my game was ad hoc systems on the fly that town could maintain. Like in town, if you went and spent time at the Dwarven Baths or at the temple or whatever in preparation for your adventures, this would start you off with a boost. It would start you off with things like temporary hit points, persistent temporary hit points that would last for days, or it would start you off with blessings, or it would start you off with extra inspiration or bonus dice or whatever. Okay, these were all things that were available in town as you interacted with town so that you could prep for the adventure just in ways of walking into the wilderness with a bonus. Okay. D&D 5e has none of that. And I was making it up off the top of my head and just inserting it in my game. So then when I sat down and say, oh, I can teach people how to use town mode, it's really easy because there's so many fun things you can do with town. I'm like, wait, none of these things are in the system. These are things that I didn't even notice I had been just like inventing. Like weapon, or like equipment maintenance and lifestyle costs in D&D are a joke, but then so is the gold piece progression. Okay, the gold piece progression is not built around anything at all. It's just a number. It is a totally arbitrary, completely useless number. Whereas in a properly designed game where town mode is the anchor for a gameplay loop, players earn enough gold to survive in town, and the excess is what they use to increase their equipment, level up, yada, yada, do all the advancement. So advancement costs money, supplies cost money, and just being in town costs money. And those things need to be figured out and then put on a table so that a GM doesn't need to think about them. And if they just roll random treasure in their adventures, the numbers will pretty much work out. Anyway, long story short, yes, I did really enjoy working with 5e for a while, and there were parts of it I really liked. I liked disentangling the encounter building system and then putting it back together in something that was so much better. And I also really, really liked making monsters for 5e. Making monsters for 5e is only surpassed by making custom monsters for 4e. Okay, I love making custom monsters for 5e. I like making custom content for 5e. Despite illness and then, you know, mental hardship, killing me here. I really enjoyed the theme packs I put out. I was very, very proud of them. And I wanted to really continue that project into this year. I had a plan for, well, I had planned about 8 of them out of the 12 that I wanted to put out this year. But what can you do? Okay. Caldrev, in Castles and Crusades, what's the deal with the DCs of things changing depending on whether it's based on a particular PC's primary or secondary stat? I will answer that question briefly, but with the caveat that I have not actually read any single full page of Castles and Crusades rules yet. I have merely skimmed it. So, the idea here is that every character has one or more, actually has at least two or three primary ability scores. Because it does not have a system of skills or proficiencies, instead you are proficient in an ability score. So if you are a rogue, for example, one of your primary stats will be dexterity. You are proficient, essentially, in all things dexterity related, which just makes sense. What Castles and Crusades does, rather than giving you a proficiency bonus because you're using a proficient stat, instead, on the back end, the GM adjusts the DC depending on whether you are doing something that you are proficient with or something that you are not. It actually changes the DC. And I realize that it looks kind of backwards, and I really want to see it in play because I think I have an inkling of why it's being done and how it might actually make the game feel better, but I don't want to talk out of my ass just yet. So hold that question for a month and then come back to it and ask me what I actually think of how it plays out. But I think apart from putting a little onus on the GM to keep track of primary stats, and adjust the DCs accordingly, I actually think that it's a better approach for getting the kind of play engagement that I want, that Castles and Crusades also seems to want. Because one of the things Castles and Crusades does not want you to do, because it is an old school RPG, or at least it claims to be, what it does not want you to do when you encounter a challenge, look down your character sheet and find the skill that will solve the challenge, roll the die, and then the challenge is solved. Okay? It doesn't want people playing like that. And I don't blame it, because that's really, really boring. The game is just an endless string of people saying, well, I diplomacy this problem. Well, I open locks this problem. Well, I jump this problem. Roll the dice, you succeed or you fail. Castles and Crusades doesn't want you to do that, so it you have your ability score modifier, and that's it. That's all you know. You know your character is strong or smart or agile or whatever. So, I will revisit that. Imperial Star Destroyer, if people don't want to give money to Kickstarter, is it possible for you to put your crowdfunding on Indiegogo? As far as I understand it, most crowdfunding platforms want exclusivity for a project. Meaning once you have posted it on Kickstarter, you cannot also crowdfund the same project on Indiegogo. I don't know if that's still the case, but I know it was the case once. I will also say that managing one crowdfunding campaign, if you have never done it, by the way, managing even one crowdfunding campaign is a full-time job for a month while it's active. So I would not want to put it on two platforms. And while I understand people's objections to Kickstarter and share them, by the same token, if I go to any platform that isn't Kickstarter, I am cutting my funding by at least half. And that is something I can't afford to do. There are more reasons to put something on Kickstarter. This, you know what? This is important, and this goes back to all the OGL stuff and all the trademark stuff and everything else. And Patreon and everything else. These things give you more than just an ability to put forward a campaign and collect money. Kickstarter does not just collect money for me and then give it to me and then take a cut. Kickstarter has a very, 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 very large, very active community of people who only pay attention to Kickstarter. Okay. So as new projects appear, the Kickstarter people, they discover these projects, not because you advertise them on your website or on Twitter or anything else, but because they're RPG people who go to Kickstarter every week and just look to see what's there and what's new. If your project takes off pretty well right from the beginning, Kickstarter immediately features it as a hot project to watch, which means it gets in front of even more of those people. I think on the Game Angry book, about one third of the people who funded that book were not people who came from my website. I can't say for sure. I didn't actually go through every supporter and compare them and contrast them, but about a third of people found that project through other means. One of them is Kickstarter, okay? So you lose anywhere between a third and a half of your funding if you go anywhere that isn't Kickstarter, okay? And that's another thing too, is Kickstarter is a very well-known word in gaming circles. If I say I'm funding this on Indiegogo, or if I'm funding the, because there is an alternative to Kickstarter, mainly for board games, and I have them bookmarked, but I can't find it right now. I'll look into it and get back to you. But there is an alternative for crowdfunding, specifically gaming projects, and it is picking up some steam. GameFound, thank you, Indigo, just pointed that out. GameFound, and it is picking up steam, but it is still not Kickstarter. So I can't afford not to go to Kickstarter, just like I can't afford to be kicked off Patreon. Okay, not at this point. If I had picked up my pace a little bit and published the game 2 years ago that I was supposed, or a year ago like I was supposed to, none of this would be a problem. But you know what? Time makes fools of us all. And I'm living with the mistakes I made. Now I have to pivot and do what I can do. But anyway, the point is, I'm kind of married to Kickstarter, because it gives me the best opportunity to succeed. I realize I will lose some people who do not want to support me on Kickstarter. And for those people, once the project is done, I will be selling it in my own store that I 100% own and operate. Okay? There's a reason I have my own store. Okay? And it is that. So, just because you miss out on the chance to give me a Kickstarter to support me on Kickstarter, it doesn't mean that you won't be able to buy the product when it comes out immediately. Because I'm also smart enough to know that when you fund a Kickstarter project, you're not just funding it for the people who support you on Kickstarter, you're funding your first print run, and you need to have enough inventory to sell more later, which is exactly what I did with my book. Okay, which is why I did not run out of stock on my book. I seem to have planned it pretty well, because the book's life cycle is just about done now, and I'm ready to publish a sequel and republish a new edition of the original, and I am just about out of stock. So I seem to have planned it really well, even though I did it for stupid I didn't do it for stupid reasons. That's another long story. I did it for very smart reasons at the time, for something that didn't pan out because someone screwed me. Anyway, moving on. Nitsua. So Slapdash, Thin and Crispy, and an unnamed Amazing Angry RPG are three distinct RPGs that you're developing, and Honeycrisp is a project name. I'm not trying to rib you. I've actually had a hard time keeping it all straight. Okay. This is all jokes. And you know what? I'm even going to go ahead and I'm going to share a joke, right? I'm going to share something that is forbidden right now. Okay. The Angry RPG, the game I have had in development for some time, I have to give it everything I work on a name so that I can refer to it, and so that I have something to type on the document, you know, the saved name files, and a way to organize it. And because I can't work on anything that doesn't have a name, and names have power. Okay. That is called Smafarge. S-M-A-F-A-R-G-E! Exclamation point. Okay. That is a joke name, but it is the name of the game engine. It's a holding. It's a placeholder name. It stands for the single most awesome fantasy adventure role-playing game ever, because it's also my design goal. Okay. Slapdash is another different game engine that I'm working on. It's the one that I just talked about. Yeah, I'm legally allowed to say it. None of you are, because I didn't give you permission. And it's trademarked. Or is it? Or am I waiting on the paperwork? You'll never know. Anyway, either way, if you say it, I'm coming after you. You're not allowed to talk about SMAF Arch. Okay, there are some people who are or soon will be in the know about SMAF Arch. They are not allowed to talk about SMAF Arch. That's one of the conditions of being in the know about it. So discussion of it is forbidden. Slapdash is the quick and dirty engine that I am working on right now that I want to throw out in a couple of months. As a joke, I used a weird analogy. I might need some extra time, and I told Proselus not to give me any extra time, but I don't want to leave any questions on the table, and I'm feeling a little bit better now, because when I started this, I had a massive headache and a stomach ache, and I was feeling like crap, but now I'm feeling pretty good. Proselus just gave me a glare emoji. All right, let's see how this plays out, but give me 15 more minutes and not a second more. And I won't use the whole 15 minutes. But I will. Okay, but I'm not allowed to ask for any more time. If I ask for any more time, then you got to kick me off. Okay? Like, literally right then, if I say, hey, give me 5 more minutes, just mute me. Why does that XD Elithid thing say popular with a fire on it? Okay, so I have 15 more minutes. Okay. I made this silly analogy because what happened with Slapdash was this. With the whole OGL thing, I was thinking about what could I do instead. I was running on the treadmill Saturday morning last week. Or it might have been this week. When was it? No, it was Saturday the 7th. I was running on the treadmill at the gym, and I'm like, I can revive Slapdash and just do that. And because I know Wizards of the Coast can't actually claim ownership of most of this crap, and they won't take me to court because they can't risk that I'll defend myself. So if I just filed the serial numbers off D20 and changed a few of the terms, I would be fine. I said, but you know what would be neat? And all of a sudden, I started to develop the idea for the dice engine and whatever, because running is boring and it gives me a lot of time to think. I came home and I got really excited. I jumped in the Discord and spun off this bizarre ass analogy based on something that I've been saying for a while, that Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition is the fast food of role-playing games, okay? It is big, it is heavy, it is full of oil and grease, and it is tremendously unhealthy, but people who don't know any better really like to eat it. And I said, wouldn't it be nice if we had a system that was like D&D? Because I like crunch. This was the whole thing. It was like, I don't want to do some fluffy little bullshit powered by the apocalypse garbage. Okay, that's barely game design. Or like Fate or any shit like that. I like my crunch. I like moving figures around on a battle mat, though without a grid, because I have gridded gridless combat. But anyway, so I did this analogy where wouldn't it be nice if, you know, like, instead of the big, like, fatty, oily potato chips, there were like baked, the baked potato chips, or like those thin and crispy baked Ritz crackers. And I was talking about my diet and everything, and this became the origin for referring to Slapdash as thin and crispy. Because I compared it to if Dungeons & Dragons is like the heavy, weighty, disgusting fast food of role-playing games, I wanted the thing that tasted good and it was a good replacement for that crappy, unhealthy thing that wasn't quite as unhealthy, but still a little bit of a guilty pleasure. Hence, thin and crispy. After thin and crispy, because we're not allowed to talk about that game that I mentioned once and will never be mentioned again by anybody until it is released, and it will not have that title when it is released, because I needed to reassure people that what I was talking about here was not quickly rushing out that game, I compared that game to a Honeycrisp apple, because a Honeycrisp apple is delicious and juicy and everybody loves them, but it is also very, very healthy. It is not anything like crappy, unhealthy food. So there are two projects. Project Honeycrisp, under which Angry Games is developing a game engine that will take 18 months to 2 years and will power a very big, hefty, weighty, but wonderful honey crisp apple type role-playing game. And the other one is Project Finn and Crispy, where I'm developing a game engine called Slapdash, which will be used to power other games. Okay? And I do all of this purposely to be a little bit obfuscating and confusing because it delights me, but also because I do have a background in accounting in corporate America, and this is how it works, where every project has to have a name, and the name of the project also has to have a secret, there has to be a secret title so that you could, like, when Star Wars came out, the reels were shipped to the theaters under the title Blue Horizon or whatever. So everybody has secret names for everything, and I like to do that. So, yeah. So I have two projects running to develop RPGs. Project Honeycrisp is to build a big, weighty, wonderful game engine that will do everything everyone wants to do. And I would love to talk more about that because it's actually going to do everything that Wizards of the Coast no longer cares to do because they think they can replace you with an AI robot, and the things that Pathfinder doesn't want to do because Pathfinder is basically just Dungeons and Dragons again. Okay. So, and then Thin and Crispy, Project Thin and Crispy for Slapdash in a couple of months. Will you document your experiences with non-D&D systems? Good information on new systems is valuable nowadays. Yeah, I'm going to try to, but I am not the kind of person, like, there was a moment where I was thinking, you know what I would like to do? I would like to do one of those 12 systems in 12 months projects. Where you try 12 different role-playing games over the course of a year. You know, you run each one for 3 or 4 sessions and that's it. I can't do that. I don't have the time to learn that many systems and put together content and stuff. And the thing is, my home games are really, really important to me because they are the things that keep gaming fun when all this shit hits the fan, okay? There's two things that keep me going in gaming. One is my home games, and I am blessed with some really, really awesome players. And it's very important, especially now, that I keep those going, because otherwise gaming stops being fun and I won't want to do it anymore. For me to run fun games, though, then they have to be games that I enjoy running, okay? Me, I like to be in it for the long haul. Okay, I can't do one shots. I need to get the world running in my head and keep it there like a holodeck. My brain is an amazing holodeck. If you let me run a world in it, that world will be deep and rich and detailed, and you can interact with all the characters, and everyone will have a name and a backstory, yada, yada, yada. If I have to keep breaking the simulation every week, if I miss too many sessions in a row, it's really, like, I lose all hope for a campaign. If I go 3 weeks without playing a game in that campaign, it is really hard for me to recover and start running it again. It's more like, well, it's time to start something new because everything broke. And lately, I've become very unreliable in scheduling, so I've had to break that rule, but it makes it a lot of a struggle. But nonetheless, the point is, I don't want to bounce between systems for fun, and I don't have work time to do it for work. So for right now, I have a D&D 3.5 game, and while it would delight me to no end to change the engine and run it under a different system, at this point, I don't want to do that, so we're going to continue that. That group is currently taking a break to help me build Slapdash. I have another group that is just starting out, and we didn't know what the hell we wanted to do, but then I discovered Castles and Crusades, and Castles and Crusades sang to me after I looked at like maybe 8 to 10 systems, none of which did what I wanted them to do. And Castles and Crusades has one tiny little compromise that I'm making, but it's one I'm happy to make. So I will talk about Castles and Crusades and what I think of it, but that's about all I can promise. Also, running a non-D&D system is useful because then I can safely write about my experiences in like Table Tales and stuff without having to worry that I'm going to piss someone off. Okay, Robopuffin. That was Wiley, by the way. I don't know if I gave Wiley's name, but Wiley asked if I'm going to document my experiments with non-D&D systems. That said, I am reading a lot more systems, but just briefly. Like, I'm skimming a lot more systems because I'm looking very, very deeply at interesting mechanics. And while I wish I had the time to actually play some of these things, because I absolutely do not believe you can make any judgment about a tabletop role-playing game before you have run it. And ideally, if you have not run at least 10 sessions of that game, you have no opinion that is worth a damn. Okay. Anyway, so I would love to be able to play these and try the mechanics out, but at least it's letting me see some interesting ideas. Okay. Robopuffin, yay, someone help me find this. Yeah, oh, I'm sorry, you are new to the Discord, but yeah. The thread Q&As are things that I always open up. I should have pinned that, the message to it, so that I could refer to it. So for next time, I will pin it and make it easier to find. Would you support Slapdash forevermore? I am not gonna be dumb enough to say that I will do anything forevermore, especially given that I am mortal, and I know that because I have studied. Okay? As a mortal, I cannot promise to do anything forevermore. I also cannot promise what my time is going to look like a year from now. But at the very least, you know, until I had something big and grand to sell, yeah, I would probably enjoy supporting that game, Slapdash, under Project Thin and Crispy. Whatever the actual title of the RPG. Oh, that's another, I didn't clarify that. Okay, when I say Slapdash and that other acronym, those refer to the game engines. Those are not the titles of the actual games themselves. Okay, so like Dungeons & Dragons is the D20 system, which was developed under, actually, okay, what the hell was it? Go back to fourth edition and they had several project names. There were two running in tandem. There was Project Flywheel and Project Orcus. So yeah, there's actually precedent for this at Wizards of the Coast, where you give a project name and an engine name and a game name and all that stuff. So yeah. So adding to the confusion is the fact that none of these are the names that will actually be on the box. Slapdash might be. Or Slapdash Adventures. Slapdash Adventures actually does have a ring to it. Anyway, will it be supported forevermore? No. Might it fall apart and fail to materialize, and then in 3 months I have to come up with a whole other different plan? That's also possible. I'm talking out of my ass about a system that hasn't even been alpha tested yet, and it might be a disaster. That said, oh, also to clarify, the D6 has been dropped from the Slapdash name. It is now Slapdash, not Slap D6-ish. Yeah. So, which I'm not saying the D6s have been dropped, but Slap D6-ish is no longer correct. Besides, they might be D10s. I think they might, the whole engine might work better with D10s. The most hated die. No. No. D4 is the most hated die, then D10. Okay, anyway. So yeah, no promises that I'll support it forever, but what I would actually like to do is to get one of my groups playing a Slapdash campaign. It would be really neat to be running my home game in a game system I wrote myself. Anyway, so, Jazzy, would Slapdash let you use town correctly? Eventually, possibly. But as released right now, you know what? Actually, it depends on how correctly you think. Will the players have to return to town from time to time in Slapdash? Yes. Yes, they will. I will make sure of that. will it have all the things about like equipment degradation and, you know, forming relationships and building, you know, a community center or a church or whatever the hell it is in town? Nah, none of that stuff's going to end up in there. It's not that big of a system. For that, you're going to have to wait for Project Honeycrisp to be done. I have gotten a real 5-minute warning. I see Wiley is typing one more question, and against all better judgment, I'm going to wait and see what that question is. But in the meanwhile, I do want to make one more announcement. And that is, I have been invited to appear on a podcast. The episode is being recorded next week, but I don't know when it will go live. But the podcast is called The Red Caps, and it is apparently an old school role-playing gaming podcast, OSR and D&D style stuff. They invited me to come on and talk, and I said, I don't know who you think I am, but I am not OSR. And they're like, no, we know who you are, and we don't really care. We, you know, you have a lot of interesting things to say, so, you know, come on. So I will be doing that, and I'll let you know as soon as that is done. And when it will go live. Meanwhile, Wiley is asking, and I can clarify this in one simple sentence. So Slapdash is for one-shot games, not longer ones? No, I would like Slapdash to support you playing it for as long as you want to play it, or for at least like 10 levels, you know, something like that. But no, it is not. It has evolved beyond that plan of here's a thing that a GM could throw together a one-shot for. It will still do that. But I like my campaign type play. So there we go. And Stu is saying 10 level maximum confirmed. Okay. So I've said all the things I said, except for one thing. Earlier, I left a little hanging, an untied up thread, a loose thread. I can't remember words. A loose thing, yeah. I almost said hanging Chad Nitsua. Just, you know, let's reference the 2000 elections, you know, because that's always a good topic. Remember when we could just innocently joke about, you know, election stupidity without it starting a friggin' war? And it didn't matter what side you were on, we could all make fun of it. Man, I miss those days. Anyway. I said there were two things that keep me going, and one of them is running games for my friends and having a good time. The other one, though, is everybody who is in this community, okay? Especially given the last 2 weeks with all the announcements that have been going on and with the live chat I hosted and the announcements and how a lot of my plans got changed and everything got fallen apart, everybody came out in one way or another to tell me to hang in there. Okay, I got so many messages just saying, look, don't quit, don't give up the ghost, stay the course, we're all here with you no matter what happens, we're going to continue to support you. I got a lot of people who just, like, there were a few folks who helped me out with financial support, which was totally and wholly unnecessary because I'm not struggling for the money right now, but I did appreciate those gestures too. But all the messages that I got and the whole response, plus seeing as soon as I put those the three theme packs up and made them available to everyone, and the downloads kept crashing my store, and I discovered, you know what, I'm not as irrelevant as I was starting to fear I had become. And I won't go into that whole fear, but I was having real moments of doubt. There was stuff that was happening that led me to believe that my best time was behind me and that I had missed my window of opportunity. So that reassured me, but also just the tremendous outpouring of support and encouragement and the don't quit. You've made my games better and the world, the RPG community would be a poorer place without you. That has really turned me around and I really appreciate that from everyone. So, thank you. All I ever say is thank you, and it doesn't seem like enough, but thank you. That's all there is. Like, I can't think of any other way to express it other than it keeps me going. So thank you, everybody. Thank you for listening tonight. Thank you for hanging out. Thank you for asking your questions. Thank you for not asking me anything else about the OGL. Thank you, Procellus, for supporting or for producing. Thank you, Router Crash, for the audio mixing. And everybody check out Router Crash's music. It really is awesome. It's great background music for working. Welcome to all the new people who have joined as a result of jumping in to support me because all this crap was going on. You are also welcome and appreciated. I'm really excited and I want to give you guys a really, really awesome little system. And I think I have it in me. And so that I'm excited about. And I'm also really excited to start this year off. And I think despite the hiccup and the bumps in the road, you know, I tripped, you know, Wizards of the Coast, they stuck out a foot. They tripped me. And so, you know, I stumbled, ripped open a knee, and I'm going to have to ice it. And I'm going to be limping for a month, but I'm just going to keep running from here. And that's mainly thanks to all of you. So thank you all and good night.